Do not adjust your computer screen. It's your mind we're changing. Story set to a theme. Think outside. Universe Box.
Let me tell you a little story about ZZT, a game that meant a lot to me. The unique thing about it, we can agree, is the power unleashed when you hit the E. In editor, have fun, I can make my own games. Shame I'm so bad at giving things names. The creations I made gave my creative side flame. In a small web community, I even had mild fame. We used the ASCII character set to represent the player, enemies, and pets. Mathematical symbols became epic threats. Well, as epic as DOS was likely to get, I was a boy stuck alone with America Online. Making bad games and avoiding sunshine, the friends that I made became my hotline. We even talked about our real lives sometimes. ZZT showed me what the internet could be. A portal to out there. And a fertile community.
From the heavens to your ears, this is Universe Box, and we gotta go back in time. Bam, 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 bam. I'm Bill Meeks.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And welcome to our second episode,
Woo!
Retro Tech.
Woohoo, we made another one.
Are you excited to go back in time?
Time, I am ready to go back in time.
I always say back in time.
I think we all do.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. You should, it's required.
It is appropriate.
Okay, so what's in the box today? Like I said, this week we're talking about retro tech. We'll open up the toolbox and show you some cool resources to access the old wide web. Next, we'll explore gadgets and games in the game box. We'll argue for and against the modern web in Soapbox. And finally, we'll talk to the digital Jesuit himself, Father Robert Balliser, SJ, in Phonebox.
Phonebox.
A packed episode.
Very packed. Very, very informative
Yeah,
episode.
And my voice is already failing me, so
awesome. Which is good. Let's get through the toolbox first, then, because I don't know that stuff.
Yeah, let's go ahead and look into the toolbox. So what we're doing for the toolbox today, you know, the theme is retro technology. I thought it would be a good idea to show you guys some tools you can use to explore the web as it used to be, as it was when I was coming up, back when I was playing ZZT, like I mentioned in the intro video there. But let's see here. We have four sites to talk to you about today. The first one is the Wayback Machine.
The Wayback Machine?
Yeah, on archive.org. Now, the Wayback Machine is an archive of the web from the 90s through today. Basically, they go to almost every website every day and take a snapshot of it. And so you can go there and you can type in the web address, then you'll have a list of the dates that you can select from. So basically, if you want to look see what Yahoo looked like back in 1998, real simple, just hit up the Wayback Machine and you'll find it. Now, that can be
found. That's kind of entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
It's completely entertaining.
It's a lot of fun. I always go there and look up old websites of mine and stuff sometimes, you know, when I'm feeling sycophantic to my younger self, which is weird. Okay, and you can get that at archive.org/web. And the links will be in the show notes at universebox.com, too, for all of these cool tools. The next up is Google Groups search. Now, if you don't know what Usenet was basically an online message board, like a forum, back before the web existed. It was text only, and it started out, you know, college students talking to college students on ARPNET or whatever, but then it became a really fertile community for people to, you know, talk about Animaniacs or whatever. What Google Groups search is they've archived all of the Usenet posts from pretty much history, all of history. And so you can find tons of original content about your favorite subjects, like I mentioned, TV shows, movies, stuff like that. For example, you can go on there and you can search through the Doctor Who news group and find posts from Stephen Moffat back when he was just a fanboy theorizing on forums and stuff. In fact, I believe some of the stuff from Matt Smith's last season, like the thematic stuff.
There.
Yeah, like the name and everything, like that. He had big post about that on the Doctor Who news group back
so
in the day.
So he'd been plotting that stuff for many moons.
If you're watching the video, which we record live every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. EST at youtube.universebox.com, you'll even see I found a post of mine on the Weird Al news group from 1998.
Of course.
Which is a lot of fun. But you can get that at groups.google.com/forum. Okay, next up is Ooh Cities, which is a – and there are several of these. So if you can't find what you're looking for here, you can look elsewhere. But basically, this is an archive of GeoCities pages. Mm-hmm. Now, GeoCities was one of the first websites that let people create their own website free of charge. Yahoo shut the servers down a couple of years ago, which was sad because, you know, that's a big part of internet history that kind of went – in Internet Archive, I don't think they
didn't do that one?
Well, the Wayback Machine site owners can disallow them from backing up the site, and I believe that GeoCities was set up like that. So there was no archive on GeoCities or on the Wayback Machine. But the team at Ooh Cities, and a couple of other archives like this saved as much as possible. They went in the last week or so it was open and downloaded everything. And I've been able to find my old websites here. You can go and find your dad's first website. It was probably about Marcy's Playground, like Marcy's Playground, super... Marcy's Playground.
Oh.
Marcy Playground. Marcy
Playground? Though? Like, really? Like, I'd have...
Depends on how old you are, I guess.
I mean, I guess.
If your dad was in high school like I was back in the late 90s.
Oh, so you're talking to the younger crowd then.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm speaking to the youth of America.
So you're speaking to the 7-year-olds of America.
Yeah, but you can find that at www.oocities.org. And our last little tool resource here is the Internet Fact Archives. Like we were talking about Usenet a couple minutes ago, and a lot of times, you know how when you go into a forum these days, they'll have like a sticky post with like...
Your FAQs.
Yeah, FAQs, facts, frequently asked questions. Well, Usenet news groups had a similar thing where they would have like a text post that would answer all sorts, any basic question you would have about the subject matter. Now, a lot of these for... specialized fields like, I don't know, science or mathematics or something like that. You know, a lot of that information might be outdated. But for, you know, if you're looking for information about a TV show or a book series or something like that, a lot of these facts that they still have available in this archive for different Usenet groups are, still have a lot of relevant information. And if nothing else, it can give you kind of a peek into what was important to the majority of newcomers to a community for X topic back in 1996 or whatever. But you can find that at www.facts.org/facts. So that does it for the toolbox. We already made it through the toolbox. Did you even show them the toolbox?
You didn't really give me time to do things
go
like
ahead, go ahead and show them
let's
the
go back.
Toolbox.
Because first there has to be...
Yeah, you have to show them the universe box.
Okay. First...
There's the universe box.
There's the universe box. This is all a work in progress.
Yeah, we're still... It's very conceptual. We're still working out the details.
Like I'm playing but, dice.
Oh, no. Oh, that's fine. Let's just...
Okay, well, there's the toolbox. Apparently, okay. I'm short of boxes.
So what's our next box coming
up
here?
Our next box coming up is hilarious, if I recall.
Work in progress,
folks. I swear next week will be better.
We'll get it fixed up by next week. No problem.
Well, let's not make that promise.
Well, the audio listeners probably like the struggling stuff.
The soapbox.
The soapbox, where we argue for and against and
something
around a particular topic. So this week, our topic of choice is the internet. Better now or then? So we're going to go, and I guess I'll go first.
Do you want to do?
Yeah, we can do. I will be taking the position of the internet was better then.
And obviously.
Then being like the 90s.
And obviously, I think it's better now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you want to go first with your first point?
Okay, sure. I can go first.
Yeah.
It's faster. Mm-hmm. You don't have to sit there and kick somebody off the phone or pray that nobody gets on the phone or that nobody calls you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things actually load in a timely fashion. You don't have to, like,
you
load the webpage, walk across the room, go get your drink, get a snack, come back. It's halfway loaded. So, you know, that's nice.
See, what I would always do is I would load up, like, 20 tabs full of Lois and Clark fan
fictions. You still do 20 tabs of Lois and Clark fan fiction.
And then let them load and come back a few minutes later. And also, you always had to hit *67 when you were dialing up your ISP, or you get kicked off by call waiting.
Yeah, well, see, we didn't have call waiting.
Okay.
We weren't that cool.
Well, that's one way to avoid the issue entirely.
Right, but...
Okay, so as for me, one of the reasons I think the internet was better then, being back in the 90s, was people created new content, and lots of it, because they wanted to, not necessarily for a profit motive, and not just as a means to display advertisements to users. Now, I mean, obviously, we have ads on our various podcasts, on our various websites and stuff. The world's changed since the 90s.
A little bit.
But I think,
unfortunately, the music's changed.
Yeah, but I think like a lot of, pretty much because people cared so much about the content they were creating, all of it was really high value, high quality. You didn't have BuzzFeeds and
top 10 lists
and slideshows and stuff, mainly made to serve ads, designed to serve ads, not to entertain the audience or their audience. They can be, but they don't add a lot of value. They don't add anything to the...
They don't add value to your life. They add value to my life.
Well, to the bigger overall online conversation.
But not everybody's going online to learn something. People are going just to be entertained. We just click past the ad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I definitely understand that. I just think it was better because the content was more valuable and added more value to the conversation. But let's see. What's your next...
My next point. Okay. This could just be because of my age, too.
Hi, Tonda Gossip, by the way.
Yes, hi, Tonda. I feel like... Well, there's more to explore. It's more open, mm-hmm. in a sense. When we got the internet, we just had Prodigy. And I feel like I was always sort of stuck in those chats and emails and everything on Prodigy. But again, it was kind of small. Mm-hmm. So that's probably all I was allowed to do.
Yeah.
At first. But, you know... I couldn't even have AIM because we didn't have – you only could have it if you had AOL.
By AIM, you mean AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, whatever.
To clarify, for the youngsters.
For the youngsters. The youngsters. Yeah, I couldn't have AOL Instant Messenger. Mm-hmm. And I probably didn't have it till like 10th grade.
Yeah.
And, you know, by then everybody's a pro. And I'm like, what's that mean? So yeah. I feel like now you can have whatever. Mm-hmm. Nothing's really like stuck.
Yeah, and another thing too is back in the 90s, there wasn't a big Google like web spider going around and collecting websites. All of the web search engines were curated. Like, mm-hmm. you had to submit your site to them, and then they had to approve it and categorize it and this, that, and the other, which in a sense was a good – in one way was a good thing. In another way, if you were looking for something really specific or something that – Alta Vista or Yahoo didn't think was worthy of going in their web directory, you were invisible online.
Right.
Which is how is
that
good?
What's that? That's good?
No. I was just talking about – I haven't moved on to my point.
Oh, I thought – I was like – No?
I just figured I'd point that out for people who might not have been there like we were, man.
Oh, man.
Okay, the web was much more secure. There wasn't things like scripting languages like JavaScript or Flash or different attack vectors really online. Most web pages were text with just a few little tags in them to make, you know, the text a little bigger or something like that. At first, you couldn't even do like background colors on web pages or even put graphics in them. It was all text. And so that reduced the amount of attack vectors that hackers had and, you know, malicious people had to get into your system. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of times you can circumvent these attack vectors these days with software like Adblock Plus or Ghostery and Flash Block, a few other things like that. But it was hard to get a virus when the web was mostly text-based, which is one of the reasons I think it was better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She agrees.
There's always an answer. I don't care what question you have. There's an answer for it. And there's probably 17 different websites telling you the answer. Like, mm-hmm. my kid has X. How do I take care of it? What is it? Help me. Yeah, there's going to be a ton of websites to be able to help you figure mm-hmm. out what it is. And then there's going to be more that are lying to you, but you're going to be able to – there's options. Mm-hmm. There's – you can actually research things without having to go to the library, which with, you know, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
You don't want them hurting those books.
I don't want to buy all those books. Yeah, buy enough.
And plus another benefit now too is that we're so much more savvy as users now than people were back in the 90s that it's really easy to pick the good stuff from
you can tell.
The fluff.
You can tell what is the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And versus what is the top 10 list, which there's nothing wrong with the top 10 list, or, you know, a slideshow or anything. Those are still good things. Mm-hmm. It just has to be done well.
Yeah. Okay, let's see here. next up, for my reasons why the internet is was better then. I almost said better now, which is like, now I'm on her side.
Yes.
I know you were encouraged to use a fake name to have an anonymous profile for safety reasons, and not just kids, but adults too.
ASL,
which was something you would put in chat rooms for age, sex, location to kind of determine if you were talking to a peer or somebody who was creepy.
Because, you know, you couldn't lie.
But this meant that using anonymous handles pretty much exclusively meant that conversations were separate from your real identity, which made conversations more open since they were free from necessarily real-life consequences. You didn't have to worry about your public reputation. You could even go in and some might consider it trolling. You could go in and take a contradictory point of view in a debate. I used to do this for debate class. I used to go into like Usenet groups and pick the opposite side of the side I was arguing to, kind of strengthen my arguments and see how people fought back against it to see how I could fight back against my opponent. But if I had known that it would be tied back to my real name, I wouldn't have gone in there and argued like, I don't know, pro death penalty, for example, which was against the opposite of the argument I was arguing. So you were free from consequences for your action, which can be a bad thing.
That's not a great thing, to be free from the consequences of your actions.
But at the same time, the conversations were much higher value because people weren't afraid to speak as much. And since everybody was an anonymous troll of some sort of another, trolls had to work more when mounting personal attacks against specific individuals. So because everyone was anonymous, trolls actually had less power because you weren't going out there with your real name. So they had to do some work before they could get it and start affecting your personal life.
Your life was just so much more different than mine. You know what I was doing? I was hanging out in teen chats going, hey, what's your favorite movie?
Oh, I was doing plenty of that too, and trolling AOL profiles of people I went to school with.
I don't know. I don't like the anonymous that I just I probably still used some variation of my name for a while, and then I realized I wanted to do something creative.
I did to a degree. Like I believe my first round of usernames was like Bill Cool and then a number.
Nice. So, Bill Cool.
So everyone knows my last name's Cool, but I'm not saying that being held accountable for your actions online is a bad thing. I'm just saying that back then, I think the conversations were a bit more open because people were a little less afraid of it affecting them in real life, so they could be more open and honest with their opinions, which adds to the marketplace of ideas, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, fine. Is this me or you?
This is you.
I don't know where we are. Okay, this is going to get a little really soapboxy. Sorry. Okay, the spread of information is insane. Like, things can go from here to everywhere in 12 minutes, basically, which can be really sucktacular for some things. I'm looking at you, Bieber, because nobody should ever care about that. Mm. But it's really good to see when it's helpful information, like this whole Disneyland measles thing. These people in other states wouldn't have known. Mm-hmm. You know, Disney's not going to send out a postcard to everybody who visited between this date and this date saying, hi, we've had some measles. Sorry. Like, that's not going to happen. Yeah. This is the only way you know if you were there during these times to keep an eye on it. Mm-hmm. And it's your own fault for not getting vaccinated. So take care of that. Mm-hmm. Box, vaccinate your children.
No, I can definitely see that. On the opposite end of the spectrum, though, and this might be a little dated reference now, too.
Probably.
But you also have situations like, I don't know, Balloon Boy, from a few years back, where social media just completely gloms onto something and goes crazy for it and makes a huge big thing out of it, and then you find out it's kind of a
scam that kid?
Too.
Yeah, the kid.
Yeah, you have all these viral scams that can happen too because information is disseminated so quickly.
Right.
But I mean, overall,
there's good and bad, but I mean, it has that potential just to pass along information.
Yeah.
You can we can discover the cure to cancer and we're all going to know about it.
Yeah,
it's not going to have to take, even Joe Schmo in rural Kentucky is going to know about it and can go to his doctor and go, this is what I need. That's helpful.
And I mean, even for every Balloon Boy, you have an Arab Spring. So, I mean, it's give and take and all that stuff. Okay, let's see. Another way I thought the internet was better back then was online communities were smaller and more like little families. They generally didn't grow to more than, like, there were 25 or 30 people whose names you knew, and then a few stragglers here and there, but they were tighter knit and you felt more at home. Like, I know, like, on various listservs, and I mentioned it in that ZZT thing up top, like that community. I knew when I went online, I could go there and have a good time and talk to my friends and feel like tight knit and safe without even having any sort of like marketing message or anything pushed on me. Which I think today, even in the tightest knit of communities, there's still going to be a bit of that. And I mean, no doubts, I'm guilty of that too. I mean, I plug my books on Twitter all the time. And
there's nothing wrong with that though.
Yeah,
that's modern marketing. That's just the way it is now.
I don't think there's anything immoral about that or wrong with that. I think that the way it was back then, overall, I guess most of my points boil down to adding value to the public conversation. And I think, you know, having smaller, tighter-knit communities that were a little bit more segregated from each other, I added value to the conversation, at least for that topic.
But see, this way, when you have all these bigger communities, you're exposing more people to more ideas. Mm-hmm. You're able to bring that small group idea. You can have your small group. Nobody's telling you have to have more than 30 people in your community, mm-hmm. Or that you have to interact with more than 30 people. But you can take those ideas that you've learned from those 20 to 30 people and take them to the masses. You mm-hmm. can take them to 2,000 people.
Yeah.
Like, you say it's adding to the conversation on the internet, mm-hmm. but you're not having that conversation with the people who it's going to spread. You don't want to spread it. Mm-hmm. You want to keep it, you want to cluster it and not leave. And I want to get my mic. That's a soapbox, people.
Soapbox.
Soapbox.
No, all fair points too. And that's what I'm actually kind of liking about this segment, because I still firmly believe in all my positions I have here, but you have really good points too, which I think
we still have more points.
Yeah, I know. I was just saying overall, I'm really enjoying what you're bringing, because you're not changing my mind, but you're influencing it and changing it in subtle ways. I still think my main points are right on, but I can see your points too. And that's what a dialogue is about, right?
We also grew up with very different internet experiences.
This is true. This is
which
very
is,
true.
You know, I'm Poppy Girl and you're, you know, programmer guy. Like, yeah. that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And we each had such a different experience that we still have a very different experience.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you have, you know, your communities mm-hmm. with your ZZT people, but mm-hmm. you know, I have like 5 different communities that I'm still very tight with, like now.
So, oh yeah,
there's definitely. That.
Okay, let's see here.
All right, we're on to my last point.
On to your last point.
It keeps people connected. Mm-hmm. We live 8 to 12 hours away from all of our family, and if it wasn't for Facebook, none of them would know much about my kids. Mm-hmm. None of them would see my kids. No, I couldn't have shown a video of Eliza playing her $1.91 thrift store Hannah Montana guitar and mm-hmm. singing a song that she wrote.
Yeah.
She wrote it. Like, she was like, oh yeah, I wrote that, mama. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, well, okay. So, like, it gives people a chance to see that part of their growing up. Mm-hmm. And that means so much to me, because I grew up near pretty much all of my family. Mm-hmm. Unlike our aunt and uncle and cousins who lived far away in Florida, we only got to see them once or twice a year. And it was like, who are you? Wait, you've changed so much since the last time I saw you. Like, you never knew what was going on with them. Mm-hmm. And now with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all of that shenanigans, you barely go a week without seeing something from somebody, yeah. or them seeing something of yours. Mm-hmm. And even though we're not physically close, I'm actually feel a lot closer to a lot of my family, mm-hmm. not as close as others, but hey, they're not online. Honestly, like, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I remember when I was a kid, for one, to keep in touch with family members who lived out of state or whatever, you had to call, and it was a long distance call, which mm-hmm. meant it cost money. So mm-hmm. to have a 20-minute conversation, it costs like 15 or 20 bucks or something like that.
It could, yeah.
Yeah, I forget what the rate was. It went down really quick in the 90s too. So it was either have a really expensive phone call, write a letter, and wait days for it to get
the
there.
Christmas letters. Mm-hmm. The Christmas letters.
Or what we used to do with my grandma and grandfather was we would fax them, because, you know, a fax.
You had a fax?
Well, my dad did for his work and stuff like that. So we would fax them, and you know, a call to do a fax was a minute or two, so it was a lot cheaper than having a full phone conversation. Wow. My grandma actually wrote me like a parody version of The Nightmare Before Christmas for my birthday one year, complete with clues to go around my house and find the present she had sent.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Okay, that's cool.
I had the little roll up of fax paper for years. I lost it somewhere along the way. It probably faded anyway, because that kind of paper, you know, loses with heat and everything. Okay, so my last point, one of the last reason I think things were better then is people online were way less cynical than they are now. The internet was new. It was fresh. There was all sorts of information we hadn't had access to before. So people were freaking out going and reading like Rugrats episode guides, because they existed and they were amazing, because we didn't have them before. Talking to people from across the world or across the world from your den was new, and everybody was loving every second of it.
Okay, I didn't go online and read Rugrat episode summaries.
But I didn't. I mean, I'm sure you had your own things that you searched for. That was just my
right.
example.
No, I understand that was just your example. But
yeah,
I feel like unless I needed to get online for homework, and I was like the first person to have a computer, woo-woo, in second grade. I went online to talk to people. I went online to relax. I did Mad Libs. That's what I did. Like, that's not...
Well, that's fair. That's why I included the talking to people across the world.
Yeah,
that
was pretty much like the only thing. But I mean, that's what I do now.
Yeah.
That's what the Facebooks and the Twitters are, is that's how I talk to my friends and go, hey, let's meet up for coffee next Friday. Okay.
Well, that's kind of always the way you kind of approach the internet, whether it's then or now. It's a medium for education. It's a medium for social. It's a medium for basically everything except interaction face to face.
Right. You know? But a lot of times now, it's used to set up those face to face. That's how we find out about different events and programs, and like that's how you can. I don't know. That's how you know like different things are happening in the community. I don't know.
Yeah, and let's see here. I'm checking the chat room here.
You're checking the Tondagasa chat room?
The Tondagasa chat room. he says, for one, he likes it better now. More communities and faster is better. But he does miss how new and exciting it felt then. And the chat rooms were fun. The chat rooms were a lot of fun.
I must be like the only person who didn't hang out in chat rooms.
Really?
I didn't do that.
Yeah,
that's not a part of my growing up.
I had within like 6 months of us getting CompuServe, I had a online girlfriend I met in a chat room who was like 3 years older than me, and I told her I was her age.
Of course.
And then she was all into Conan O'Brien, so I was like, I'm into Conan too. I'd never seen Conan before, and I could never catch an episode because my mom kept catching me trying to watch it.
But see, right there, I mean, that's not a positive thing. You're purposely lying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
because of that whatever.
Well, I mean, she knew my real name and everything.
Oh, but you told her you were 3 years older.
I did.
So, and you lied to her about your interests. How is that fun?
Well, I mean, what you know, 11 or 13 or 13-year-old boy doesn't do that sort of thing.
I'm just saying.
Dealing with romantic things. I don't think that's an online thing, necessarily. I think that was more of being a teenage boy.
There was a better chance of me lying in person than lying online.
Well, I think that had a lot more to do with me being a 13-year-old boy with a 13-year-old boy who weighed 350 pounds with a girl who was interested than it being online necessarily. But no, a really good conversation. I really enjoyed that. Okay, so what's our next
our
box, Anne-Marie? Bring out the box.
The game box. You don't have my camera on.
I know, right? The game box. Now tell us what's in the game box today, Anne-Marie.
Okay. In the game box, Casey reviews a game system that will let you play all of the old retro games. Then Bill attempts to teach a youngster about technology from his day.
And we're going to keep it retro here with the game box. So enjoy, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes with hopefully Father Robert Ballister. He hasn't added me on Skype yet, but
we'll get there.
Fingers crossed.
Everything old is new again. That adage could not be more true when it comes to the world of video games. Back in the 80s and 90s, video games were everywhere. They invaded pop culture in a way that hadn't ever been seen. In 1985, Nintendo released a game called Super Mario Bros. Some people say that Super Mario Bros. Single-handedly resurrected video games after the infamous crash of 1983. Nowadays, while there are an influx of next-generation games and systems flooding the market, retro video games are giving the big boys a run for their money. The only caveat to this revolution is the sometimes astounding prices gamers have to pay for classic video games and systems. Nowadays, an original Nintendo Entertainment System can run upwards of $50. And while there are an abundance of classic games for dirt cheap, there are an equal amount that are very expensive as well. Rock 30 Games has come out with an economical way to play your old, or new as it may be, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, and Genesis games all in one console. The new Rock 30 Games branded Super Retro Trio from Retrobit brings the three classic consoles together for a low price of only $69.95. The console itself is built well. You may imagine it would be a feat of engineering to shove three consoles into the space of one, but this console does it beautifully. It has a standard RCA connection on back for video and audio, and even includes an S-Video input for older TVs. The nice part about this Super Retro Trio is not only that it has doors for all three consoles, which cuts back dramatically on dust and other dirt getting in and ruining the console, but each bay is labeled with which console it is, making it much easier to know where to put each game. You may think I'm joking with this feature, but I have had a triple loader console in the past, and it took just a little bit of trial and error to figure out where games go. The other nice feature this console has is the ability to actually turn the console itself off. Other triple loader consoles don't have that option, and you just have to unplug the console to turn it off, which may ruin games. The front of the console has another door that protects the controller ports and video switches. You can plug your original NES, SNES, and Genesis controllers in and play it as though you actually had an original console. It does also come with the controllers that can be used for any of the three consoles. The one gripe I do have about the console itself as a whole is the switch in front that controls whether you're using the NES, SNES, or Genesis controllers. It's a nice feature, but shouldn't be standard. Plus, if the switch is on Genesis and you want to play the NES, you have to switch it or else the controller won't work. That, again, took a little bit of trial and error on my part. That switch alone, though, does not detract from the fact that this is a great console. It's built well, has inputs for NES, SNES, and Genesis controllers, and can even play import games. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give the Rock 30 Games branded Super Retro Trio console 4 out of 5 stars. Super Retro Trio is available at Rock 30 Games or online at rock30games.com.
Liam Meeks, welcome to Universe Box.
It's really fun being on Universe Box for the first time ever.
It's really fun having you on Universe Box for the first time. This is my son, Liam, and he's a newer kid. How old are you, Liam?
6.
Yeah, so he's pretty new to this earth, and I thought it would be fun to go back and look at some old technologies, show them to him, and see if he knows what they are. So why don't we go ahead and play the game? Liam, stop messing with the microphone. And now we're going to play Guess the Gadget. Liam, are you excited?
Yeah!
Whoa, why are you so excited?
Because I'll get to see old days technology.
Oh yeah, that's what we're going to do, huh? What do you think this is?
A musical instrument?
A musical instrument? Like, what kind of musical instrument?
Well, I don't know every musical instrument.
Nope, you're wrong. It's an envelope licker. This invention, which was by Reynolds of Chicago, was a byword... Hey, dude, stop messing with the microphone. So basically what it does is it has like a little wet cloth in there that licks the envelope, and then it has another thing that mashes it down closed. That's pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's really interesting. All right, on to the next picture.
On to the next picture, right? What do you think this is?
A person?
Not the person. What he's wearing on his hand there.
A technology glove.
A technology glove? That's pretty close to the actual name. What do you think it does? Dun,
dun, dun, dun. It's hard.
I'll give you a clue. This is an early version of a toy that you use all the time now.
A game playing glove.
Yeah, it's the Power Glove. It was a controller for the original Nintendo, you know, Super Mario Brothers, the NES arcade game we have, or the Nintendo arcade game.
Yeah, and also Skylanders, Swap Force.
Yeah, but you could use it as motion control. You could kind of bank your hand left and right to run fastwards and backwards, or forwards and backwards.
And how do you use it to attack in Skylanders Swap Force?
You don't use it with Skylanders Swap Force because it's for the original Nintendo.
Oh.
Doesn't it look a little bit like a Wiimote to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, the one side here looks almost just like a Wiimote.
Yeah. Yeah, the same arrow controls.
What do you think this is?
A watch.
A watch? You're wrong. You know what this is?
What?
It's an early GPS. Basically, Yeah, basically what you did is they took these miniature scrolls that had directions and maps to where you were going, and you put them in this little device, and you mounted it on your dashboard. And then when you were driving along, you just turned the little crank. When you made a left onto Maple Street, you turned the crank to see where you were going next, or, you know, to see the map or whatever. But it never really caught on because not a lot of people got them.
I've heard of scrolls before. Wizards used some.
They do, but not to drive.
And the scrolls that wizards use have very strong spells.
What do you think this is?
A wind system.
A wind system? Like to create the wind?
No, like an air system.
Oh, like an air conditioner kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or an air cleaner? Nope. You know what this is?
What?
It's a device called the clapper. Basically what this is, it's a sound controlled on and off switch. So you take this, you plug in a lamp or something to it, and then when you're sitting there watching TV and you're getting really tired and you're like, I'm going to fall asleep in my chair, you just go, and it'll turn on or off for you. These were really popular back in my day.
Whoa.
Would you like a clapper?
Yeah.
Yeah? What would you do with the clapper?
It would be easier to, like, turn off your the TV.
I was gonna say, don't turn off my computer, because then this video will stop recording.
Can you pull up some computer technology now?
What do you think this is?
Like one of those things you like do this with to flatten sheets? Or an ironer?
No, it's not an iron. It's not a clothing iron. I'll give you one more shot.
Can you give me a hint too?
It was in Back to the Future too. In that retro store that Marty went into, which was ironically in 2015. This is, and it was one of the most popular household appliances when I was growing up.
Ooh.
It's called the Dustbuster.
Oh, the Dustbuster.
The cool. Dustbuster. It's a handheld vacuum cleaner.
Whoa.
What is this?
Is it from Back to the Future?
I think there might be some of these in Back to the Future, maybe.
I've seen it in the video game.
Oh, yeah, it's probably part of the video game, huh? Do you know what they're called or what they do?
Well, they make electricity.
Oh, no, this isn't one of those.
Oh.
This is a different thing.
Oh, antennae.
These are bunny ears, which was basically an antenna. And it's called that because it pokes up with two ears like that, right? You think that's funny?
But bunnies are really cute.
They are. Okay, Liam, last item, last gadget. What is this?
A printer.
A printer? So it's printing out that black thing?
Wait, what is the black thing? Oh, it makes like those whole tapes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What are those tapes called?
Well, I don't really know.
Okay, so what do you think this is if that's a tape?
A tape recorder.
Nope, close though. This is a tape rewinder.
Whoa.
What we use these for was back in the day, like, you would go to a video store to rent these tapes, right? Yeah. And you had to rewind them before you returned them or they would fine you. So a lot of people said they could, you know, pop in the next movie. Well, because it took a while for the tape to rewind, to get back to the beginning of the tape. So
yeah.
It would take like 2 or 3 minutes. So they could pop, they could put the tape in this and rewind it while they started the next movie.
Whoa.
Pretty smart, huh?
Yeah. Could people afford to buy any back in your day?
Yeah, they were more expensive though, for sure.
Oh.
Did you enjoy all the technology we got to see, Liam?
Yeah.
Yeah? What was your favorite item?
The tape rewinder,
but that's the last one we saw. I mean, we had the bunny ears, the robot, the armatron, the dustbuster.
Well, all of them, I really
all
like.
All of them?
Yeah.
Cool.
Alright, thanks for joining us.
Okay, I guess we're out. See you tomorrow, Emery. Bye.
Bye.
Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, and sorry for the live video users if the audio ducked there a little bit. I think Skype does something weird with the audio ducking. But good news is we have our guest on the line. Welcome to the show, Father Robert Balliser, Padre SJ, the digital Jesuit. How you doing?
Hello.
I'm fine. I have a bunch of my co-twits flying drones behind me because that's what they do. But other than that, pretty good.
Oh, yeah, because if you're not familiar with Father Robert, he hosts a bunch of shows on twit.tv, a netcast network of sorts. So he's all hip to the technology and everything. Father, Padre, Robbie, Bobby. Okay, since we're talking about retro tech this week, why don't we start off and what was the first time you remember ever using a computer ever?
Oh, it has to be. So I grew up in the Silicon Valley, and we were not a well off family. So the way I got my tech was my brother and I would go dumpster diving. We'd crawl through the refuse, the old computers, the junk that a lot of the Silicon Valleys would throw out. And so the very, very first computer I ever had was pre-Altair. So the way that you would program it, it had a row of 9 switches and you would set on or off for the bits. So you could set 1 byte of code and then you would hit the execute button and that would commit it to memory. And you had to do this until you had a program. So that, and the programs only had some lights that like you could make blink on the top of the box. So that was my very first computer. Not exactly powerful and not exactly like an immersive reality type thing.
Oh, no, definitely not. Not one of those UIs like they have in Jurassic Park either. When is the first time you remember getting online? Now, it doesn't have to be, you know, the web or something, but first time remember getting on the line.
I can actually tell you exactly when. That would have been 1984. I had a 300 baud modem. It was an acoustic coupler, so I don't even think it got 300 baud. And the idea was you had like a little rubber set that you would put the phone handset into, and you would lock it in there. Then you would have to dial the number on the phone. The computer wouldn't dial it for you, and then when it heard the tones, it would try to establish a connection. And it was to a BBS, a bulletin board system, a
nice.
Very old school. Yeah, it was, you know, a bunch of geeks like myself, we would set up bulletin board systems. I had a one phone line bulletin board system that you could call into, and then I expanded it to 2 phone lines. But it was very touchy because the primary phone line was the main phone line for our house. So anytime someone would pick up, Mom, I'm on the. And the second line I actually stole from our neighbor. So whenever they went away for vacation, and they went away a lot, we ended up being a 2-line BBS. But it was amazing because you got to see people doing things. They would download these huge, at the time, huge files of like, you know, 20K that would take a long time to get. that was my first experience of being connected to other people.
Now, BBSs are one of my favorite things to do on BBSs back in the day was hit up door games. Like my favorite personally was Legend of the Red Dragon. What was your favorite door game, or do you have any favorites that you can think of?
Yeah, though I can't remember the name. It was like Star something, not StarCraft, but Star Trade Wars. Trade Wars. That was it. Trade Wars. It was an RPG, massive RPG. So you could play with multiple players. Everyone would make their move, and then at the end of the day, the clock would advance, and all the moves would be played out. I got addicted to that. And it was one of these things where this was like the precursor to Farmville, where if you did not log in at least every day and make your move, you wasted your move. And if you wasted enough moves, everyone would just gang up on you. Tradecraft showed me that you could have some sort of interaction, competitive interaction with other people. It's going to be my first.
Okay, now I know these days you're really big into the drones and everything. What was your favorite non-computer gadget back in the day?
Ooh, good question. A non-computer gadget.
Yeah, I mean, it could have like microchips in it or something, but not like a computer related, a toy.
right. Actually, I know what it was. My father traveled a lot when I was a kid. He'd do business trips all around the world. And one time he came back from Tokyo and he had this, it was like that game that they play that's like Plinko where the balls fall down and they could go into different slots. So it was kind of like that, but it was more geared to children, so it had different slots. It was like a Rube Goldberg machine, and I remember this thing was cool because it was semi handmade. I don't know where he had gotten it, And my brother and I probably spent the better part of a year modifying this thing into this huge Rube Goldberg machine where the balls would go to other rooms and then come back. It had nothing to do with computers. So it was all done with gears and with belts and with pulleys. But it was fun because it did teach you logic. You know, if this happens, then this happens. If that happens, then that has to do it. I want to remember the name of it. It had like a cat on the box. but that might just be a Japanese thing.
Okay, let's see here. First website. What was the first website you ever created?
Actually, this one's easy. Dr. Rosenblatt, who was a professor over at the University of Santa Clara, back in 1997, I started helping her, and I made a very simple web page, HTML page, for her department over at Santa Clara University. The very first web page I made for myself was probably in 1992.
Oh, wow.
And I remember because it had all the every flashy icon I could think of, every under construction icon, and animated GIF was on there. It was, I mean, I wish I had a copy of it because I could look at it and go, yeah, that spells douche. That's douche. This would be the douche
web
right here.
Nice. Yeah. And I think most web pages until like 1998 or 1999 were basically archives of animated GIFs. More or less.
And the cat.
Yes, and the cat.
And the hamster dance.
They were all versions of the hamster dance.
Yes.
The hamster dance was amazing. One of my favorite websites. And trivia, that song that plays in the hamster dance, that's from the Disney animated Robin Hood.
Yes, it is.
The movie opens with that. On our soapbox segment a few minutes ago, Padre, we were talking a little bit about the internet now versus the internet then. What do you think some of the main differences are in the internet between now and back in, like, say, the 90s? I think there's a little delay. But
okay, I will say what it's not. The difference is not porn, because the internet has always existed. Porn has always existed on the internet, so we'll just get that out of the way. It all comes down to speed, really. I mean, if you look at the internet back then was Gophernet, right? Mm-hmm. It was FTP. It was people knowing command lines so that you can get files off of remote servers. Now everything can be graphical because the speeds are so tremendously better. Back to my first online experience with a 300 baud modem. By the time we had moved to the internet, I was still using a 14.4 or a 28.8 modem. Mm-hmm. So 28K sounded like a lot then, but here at the Brick House, we've got what, 2 10-gig lines? and that just really opens up the possibilities of what you can do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I was making the point a little earlier, too, that, yes, the speed is helpful and all that rich content coming down the pipe is very helpful, but it also is kind of an attack vector it points to with a JavaScript and everything. But let's see here. Anne-Marie, did you have any questions for Padre? I don't think you guys got to talk at all.
No, I really didn't. This is my first interaction with Padre. Hello. I wasn't able to. Really come up with much.
Well,
sorry.
Padre, I think we are working with a little bit of a delay here, probably because we're streaming out at the same time, and we don't have 10 gigabits coming in here, but where can people find you online?
You can always find me at twit.tv. So if you just go to TWIT, just like it sounds, .tv, you're going to find the network. And right now I do 4 shows. I do This Week in Enterprise Tech on Mondays, where we get to talk about data centers and basically how the world is connected. On Tuesdays, I do what's called Padre's Quarter. It's like a variety show. It's basically anything that interests me that week. That's what we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. Starting in March, I'll be taking on another show, Before You Buy, which is our product review show. And I think I probably have one more left in me. twit.tv. Also, you can find me on Twitter. Just go to twitter.com and look for Padre SJ. That's PADRESJ. You'll find out whatever I'm doing. Not just here on Twit, but around the world.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time to join
you.
Us today. And I'll be in touch with you a little after just to say thank you. More personally, everything. But now I'm going to hang up on you. Bye, Padre.
Bye, Padre.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was fun. Minus the little crash we had in the stream
but that's okay.
You know, it's a work in progress. We're still working out the technology and everything.
And as we pointed out, we don't have the hardcore internet that the Brick House has.
Yeah, and I think you're supposed to have a separate computer for Skype and stuff. But I was like, hey, let's roll the dice and see if it goes. It went pretty okay.
Wait, we made it most of the way.
Okay, so we have one more box left here.
One more box. Well, two more boxes.
Two more boxes.
One more for this episode.
Yes. Okay, next up, ready, we have set, the mailbox.
I was even like presented it properly.
Oh, and I didn't have the camera.
No, I'm you never so with sorry. The Amory, and Amory camera's black.
It'll take a second. It should pop up here, maybe. Nope. Technical issues. It happens. No, but the mailbox. Where you guys write in and you let us know about what you think about that week's theme. This week, retro tech. The email's universeboxshow@gmail.com. The Twitter is @universe_box, which we've got a lot of comments on home after the home episode, which have been great,
which is
too.
Awesome.
And the Facebook is facebook.com/theuniverseBox. And the voicemail number is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. And first up, we have Bobby. Take it away, Bobby.
Retro tech, I've decided to talk about a piece of tech that was a bit ahead of its time. Just about every TV you're going to buy today is going to be connected to the internet. You're going to be able to surf the web even, play movies off the internet, browse, shop, visit Facebook, do whatever you want to do for the most part on your computer. But I was doing all of that back in 1996 with a device known as the Web TV. It was known as Web TV, and it was great. All of my friends had computers, but this is how we surfed the internet at my home. We could just pop right down on the couch, turn on the TV, and start surfing. It let you do everything you wanted to. You could, like, build websites even on, like, Angel Fire and GeoCities. Yes, that's how old this was. Angel Fire and GeoCities. But it also allowed you to surf what was available on the internet at that time, which, of course, was not near as vast as it is now. But it was the internet. It even had a webcam where you could video chat with other people who had webcams. Now, of course, again, this was 1996, so the dialing options weren't all that great. I believe 56K was one of the options, but it definitely delivered what it promised. It was a great and easy way to surf the web and to do most anything you wanted to do with, and, you know, of course, it didn't have the processing power of the hard drive on a computer, but this wasn't for people who were looking for that. This was a $200 set-top box, more or less. Almost as if their thing was like they were going to turn the internet into cable. This was, you know, it was the next cable. This was going to be your set-top box. And they were doing all of this in 1996. So yeah, it was a bit ahead of its time. I believe Microsoft later bought the technology and named it MSN TV. Mm-hmm. And it existed until, I believe, sometime last year, the year before last, in 2013. So while, alas, web TV is no more, every time I turn on Netflix on my TV or browse the internet while I'm sitting on my couch, I think of web TV.
Hi, Bill.
Thank you very much, Bobby. And yeah, I remember web TV was something I wanted so bad until I could get it, and then by then, I didn't need it anymore.
Nah.
You know, but I remember my parents got it when I was in college and stuff. I remember and visiting their house and playing with it a little bit. It was nice. It was nice. It could have, because I don't think it had a mouse, or like maybe they had lost the remote that functioned as a mouse or something like that.
Yeah, I never had one.
So the control was a little weird, but it was good overall. Okay, next up is Nicole. Take it away, Nicole.
Hi, Bill and Ann Marie. This is Nicole from Ohio. And when I first thought of retro tech, the first thing I thought of was my very first time watching Star Wars. I was born in 1982, so I wasn't out watching it in theaters.
I was too, by the way.
First run. And I was old enough that my first time seeing it wasn't the specialized editions either. But we didn't own it at home on VHS. We owned it on an RCA Selectivision disc. If you don't know what those are, I didn't know anyone else who owned this at the time. But basically, it was a plastic sleeve that was about the size of a pizza box, but it was about a half inch thick. And inside the sleeve was a disc, and I had to look it up, but basically it was read kind of like a phonograph record. It had a groove in it, but it was all protected inside the sleeve. And then when you wanted to watch your movie, you turned on the machine, which was kind of spotty in how it worked, but you put the sleeve in, and you waited a little bit till you heard this whirring sound, then you kind of pulled the sleeve out and left the disc in the player, and then you could watch a movie for an hour, because that's all that would fit on one side. So you'd have to take it out, flip it over and put the other side in to watch the rest of the movie. And that is how I watched Star Wars for the first time when I was, oh, I don't know, I was probably a teenager, but fell in love with it that way, and then went out and bought the VHS because it was a little bit better quality. But yeah, and my parents' house still, they still have that RCA Selectivision, and they have boxes of 8-tracks, and underneath their television that no longer has a VCR connected anywhere to it are shelves and shelves of VHS tapes where they have taped shows off of the television that they probably have never watched for a second time. So, yeah, that's just my thoughts on RetroCheck. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Very nice, Nicole. I'm trying to pull up a picture of the Selectivision, the RCA Selectivision here. Here, I found a picture of the disc I'll show here real quick on the stream. Let me find it here.
Oh, my.
Yeah, but a very, very kind of future-y looking, too.
That is.
Yeah. I kind
of. It's almost creepy.
Yeah, it's like halfway between a record and laser disc or something, I guess.
Oh, the laser discs. They'd roll in the TV. And
oh, yeah, with all those science slides and the colorblind test.
colorblind test.
Yeah, we for our science class, we did a colorblind test on laser disc for some reason. I don't know. Probably a little overkill, right? Okay, our last voicemail here is from Tim. Take it away, Tim.
Anne-Marie, Bill. This is Tim from Ontario calling you.
So it was 2001. I would be 10 years old then because I'm 23 right now. And I got to meet Bill Gates, the president of Microsoft. Now, the reason why I got to meet Bill Gates is because I helped the Canadian National Institute for the Blind test a website that had all digital content for the blind and visually impaired and was specially designed for accessible use. And, you know, I guess the reason why this is RetroTech is because, you know, it involved, XP laptop rather than Vista laptops or Windows 7 or 8 or however many Windows there are laptops. And also because, you know, there's huge exciting opportunities for the blind nowadays. You know, you can go and you can find, you know, 10 or 12 or 13 or 20 blind gaming websites out there. I use, you know, one of them that I like, and, you know, as digital, book availability, you know, that has definitely exploded since 2001 with things like the Kindle, with things like Audible. And so, you know, it's just interesting to look back then and, you know, look now and see how much the internet has changed because, you know, it, of technological advancement. And, you know, in like even 20 years, I just... It blows the mind of how much technology will advance and how much it already has advanced. And I just wanted to, you know, throw my 2 cents worth in as a blind person who uses accessible technology. I hope you get this message. If you don't, I might try and call again over Skype. So this is Tim. I've been a first.
Thank you so much, Tim.
And I was thinking before we read Michael's letter, we should probably show off the retro tech that we have in the studio today.
Oh yeah, we have the Sony Mega Watchman.
I have no idea
over here, which is basically a combination of radio and TV. By the way, thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Sorry,
I chat with Tim on Skype on occasion.
He's
great. He actually taught me about that they do basically audiobook versions of TV shows for the blind.
That's right,
which is really cool. But yeah, this is a combination radio / television,
give him a camera
with Emery Cam.
This is a phone.
Old style phone.
If you would have seen the 3-year-old with this, let me just say, he picked up the wire and said, "Mommy, what's this?" And I was like, it connects to the other part. And then he tried talking to it. He said, "This needs charged." It's broken. I'm like, it's not broken, sweetheart.
Yeah, I'm trying to see here. I know we got some...
There were some really good tweets.
Yes, from Casey Friels and Bobby Hawk. I think Bobby Hawk's was the web TV, but let's see if I can find a couple more of these. Lots of retweets for Us. Okay, yeah.
The TV. Oh, that one was awesome.
Okay, let's
it was
pull
hilarious,
this up over here.
Hilarious.
Yeah, here's a picture from the opening day for Windows 95.
That guy was really excited.
Casey Friel sent in Bobby's Web TV. Let's see here. Oh, Bobby also sent in this fun smartwatch that has like a full keyboard attached to it, which is really odd. I guess that was probably like to put your planner information or your contact information or something. Let's see here. Oh, and look.
Casey.
Retro consoles that Casey found at his local shop in Nashville.
That's hilarious. That's super his shop.
Fun. Yeah, very, very fun. Oh, that's a spoiler. No, but
spoilers.
Thank you guys for sending those in. And we're going to wrap up with a letter from Michael Lucero, who, by the way, he put a letter in last week about home, or rather it was an excerpt from a novella of his. And he didn't include the link, but he sent us the link this week. It's intracoastal-wanderings.com/blog
Not bog.
/bog. Polywog in a bog. But you can find the link for that in the show notes at universebox.com for episode 2, Retro Tech, as well. But Michael says, as to my first memory of using technology, it would probably be in computer class in second grade. We learned on Apple computers, which is strange since I never buy Macs anymore and feel like they are a foreign language whenever I use one today. Agreed, Michael. But the thing I remember most about computer class was playing the Oregon Trail. Not the original text-based one, but the deluxe one where you could actually use your cursor as a crosshairs to hunt game. The game was supposed to teach you about history, the dangers of traveling in the past, and not like Doctor Who traveling in the past, but traveling while living in the past. And especially about overhunting and resource management. If you hunted too much in one particular place, you'd get nothing but squirrels, and those few and far between. Of course, while I find these lessons admirable today, they didn't work on me as a child at all. I would always kill as many buffalo as I could, even though one was like 500 pounds and you could only ever use 200 pounds at a time. The Internet Archive actually released all these old DOS games on their site so you can play the game today and relive your childhood. And he includes a link here to archive.org. We will also include that in our show notes. I'll try and throw the game up here real quick if I can. If it's going to load. Here's the Oregon Trail
Deluxe. I have
Deluxe.
To be the only child who doesn't remember playing the Oregon Trail.
Oh, that's cool. It's using DOSBox.
I remember doing my own math machine. Games.
But Michael mentions that he played the game on here and it didn't seem nearly as challenging nor take as long as he remembers. Yeah, he got through the game in about an hour with only one death in his party from a snake bite. I remember it taking about a week's worth of computer classes to get through a single game, and often you would lose to people to cholera or dysentery, etc. Unfortunately, it failed to load, probably because I have Ghostrion or something. But there's my retro technology moment. Sorry if it got too long. Can't wait to hear episode 2. Take care, Michael.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Yes, thank you very much, Michael. And I guess, you know, we want you to submit your stories for next week's episode because it's super important. The email's universeboxshow@gmail.com. The Twitter's @universe_box. The Facebook is facebook.com/theuniversebox. And the voicemail is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. Okay, so I guess... let's see. What's in the box for next week, Anne-Marie?
I don't think it's done the way it is.
Yeah, we didn't put the thing in there, did we?
What's in the box? Oh, now you give me the camera on the
wall. I am.
What's in the box is supposed to be cookies.
But we forgot to put cookies in
before
the show. Work in progress, people. Highly conceptual. Conceptual. No, but next week we're exploring sweet round things. That's right.
They don't have to be round. Not all cookies are round.
Very true. We're talking cookies. Have a favorite recipe? What kind of cookies did your grandma make? Tell us your cookie stories to get included in the episode. And
were you a Girl Scout? Tell us your first experience about selling Girl Scout cookies because it's Girl Scout cookie time. I'm jumping on him while he's trying to read things. Ha!
In fact, I almost insist someone writes in with that story. Just make it up. Bobby Hawk.
No, Bobby.
Okay, let's see here. So let's do some takeaways here right at the end about retro tech. What have we learned today about retro tech? Well, we've learned that technology is more advanced now, but that doesn't necessarily make it better. It does
in
some ways.
It's better.
In other ways, maybe not.
Back to the soapbox.
A lot of today's technology owes a debt to novelty gadgets from the past. Early web communities were something special that aren't around anymore and we likely won't get back.
No.
And the past informs represents the future. So this stuff is super important to learn about. It's not just nostalgia or living in the past. It's history. And it's important, especially as we become more and more internet citizens.
Interesting.
To understand the history of the internet and what came before, to be good internet citizens now, just like to be an American citizen and not know about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I feel like you've taken this on a very serious turn that I wasn't prepared for.
Well, that's what the takeaways are for.
Okay.
Retro tech.
I'm ready to talk about some cookies.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm very excited for the cookies
I'm
episode.
I'm so excited.
Although,
we really
diet,
want somebody to send in cookies.
Oh,
we
yeah.
Want to, yeah. Can you put up the thing?
I don't have the thing to put up. But
you had
I,
it
I
on
will,
the Twitter.
I will look it up here.
Okay. So here's what we want for next week. And yes, mm-hmm. I know we sort of already covered this. But you can either send us a recipe, and I am going to make somebody's recipe for mm-hmm. trying on the show. It's not on the – okay. Or can you call us, send us a video of mm-hmm. you making your cookie? That would be cool. Or you can send us cookies to there.
Yes. To
send
the,
us the cookies.
The P.O. Box is Universe Box, P.O. Box 2641, Acworth, Georgia, 30102. And you can find all this all of our contact information at the site universebox.com. Just click on contact there. And yeah, send us cookies. It'll
send us
fun.
Cookies. We want to try them.
Definitely. Okay. I can have a nibble of each one because of my
diet. I know.
Diet.
You can have like a bite.
But it'll be fun.
It's fine. I'll eat all the cookies.
I'll lick all of the cookies.
I'll be 700 pounds by the time we get to the next episode.
Okay. Anne-Marie, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at amdsimone or at cchcblog, where I talk about things that are crafty and crunchy.
Excellent. And as for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Bill Meeks, and you can follow my superhero adventure book series, Dog Boy Adventures, at dogboyadventures.com. In the second one, there's a character named Applebottom, which is a very silly name, which is why you should buy it. And you can also check out both of our other podcasts at legendsofgotham.com, where we talk about the Fox Show Gotham, and greetingsfromstorybrooke.com, where we talk about the ABC show Once Upon a Time. Okay, well, I guess that's about it for episode 2. Join us next week for cookies, and until next time,
remember to think outside.
Adjust your computer screen. It's your mind we're changing. Story set to a theme. Think outside. Universe Box.